Welcome to Whistleblowers, episode 5. I'm here with Jennifer Stone, investigative journalist, author, and interested crime expert, taking us along the leads of some unsolved cold cases in New South Wales, Australia, and the world. Today, we're going to have a look at King's Cross, Sydney, Australia, and the connection to the banks. Morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a welcome. And it's great to have you here. And we've just been chatting and having a coffee and looking at some photographs and some newspaper articles that go right back to the 1930s in King's Cross, Sydney, Australia. The entertainment capital, once the most cosmopolitan part of Australia, developing country through the late 1800s, early 1900s. And, of course, international investment, the arrival of different immigration groups to what we have today, a very multicultural society here in New South Wales and other parts of Australia. So last week we moved from 3 hours north of Sydney, an unsolved murder, and we touched on bigger interests, organised crime, and the links possibly to King's Cross, organised crime groups. And you mentioned the banks. Where does this story that involves the banks start, and what made you go down that avenue?
Abe Saffron in the Woods Royal Commission was noted to have his illegal bookkeeping books in the ANZ night safe. They'd be put in there from the Carousel Club. So it was something that I worked on to see the links, to see what Juanita was looking at and following, to figure it all out. Because why did she go missing? Why did all her evidence just disappear? You think she would have had evidence at home, that people would have brought forward to the police.
Juanita Nielsen was an Australian newspaper owner, journalist and heiress who was notable for her activism with the Green Bands. She disappeared in King's Cross, Sydney. Juanita Joan Nielsen disappeared 4th of July 1975 and has never been found. The people responsible for her disappearance have never been identified and no trace of her has ever been found. So Jennifer, you mentioned Juanita, the banks, Abe Saffron, go on.
Well, Juanita Nielsen was very much against the upgrading of Victoria Street to the new developments. And that was the lead I was working on too. I was following up everything that I thought she had been working on. Frank Thieman was quite well known about the Victoria Street developments. He had sold a business that was $3 million, but those towers would have cost more than that. So you started to think, well, how was he getting the money? Where was he getting the money from? And the only thing I could think that was churning over that sort of money was a drug network that was not exposed.
Right.
And then when you start to read about the cranes in New York back in time, and they all link to no one like cocaine cranes. The cocaine was feeding the building development.
What era are we talking about there?
So in the 70s,
right.
Juanita Nielsen started writing a newspaper in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
That was after being abroad, being married and coming home and being single.
Mm.
So she was divorced at the time and mm-hmm. running the newspaper. She had David Farrell in a relationship at the time. But she had, I think she had really moved on from that relationship at that time and had another guy that was helping her to do with the Green Bands.
So interesting, like, again, the material that we share here on Whistleblowers, we've mentioned in all of our podcasts, it's in the public arena. It's in newspaper articles that Jennifer has researched over decades. It's in information that police have posted on the internet and also information that's been handed to the police by interested parties. So with Juanita Nelson, we're just throwing light on information that's already out there and trying to put the whole situation into some sort of perspective so that investigations can continue, because this murder is currently unsolved and the body has never been found. So Jennifer, one of the photographs relates to the 1920s or 30s there, one of the oldest buildings in King's Cross on the corner of Roslyn and Darlinghurst Road, and people can see this photograph. It was originally a bank. What can you tell us about that building?
Well, it was built in the 1920s, I believe. The subdivision is quite old, and it was linked into the banks going in on the ground floor to the Union Bank. And then that Union Bank changed to the ANZ Bank as time progressed. I don't know what time it was. In the Woods Royal Commission, it linked to the ANZ Bank. And when Juanita Nelson went missing, it was the ANZ Bank. But the key really is to go back further to the Union Bank to start to understand this control on the drug network and how the banks have been used, allegedly, to clean the funds. Well, how do they get the drugs money from the cash on the streets to being able to build buildings on Victoria Street, for instance?
Yes, yeah, very good. And that bank, by the way, the Union Bank, was, you know, an American-owned bank, with connections to some of the most powerful names in America. As you say, all the information we're talking about here is allegedly, but that bank connects to America in what way?
To Prescott Bush and Lord Jacob Rothschilds. It was like two families joining together. Prescott Bush got charged after the war, World War II, for funding the other side, and it was through the Union Bank.
So they had a presence here in Sydney way back in the 1930s, and then later that bank became the ANZ Bank, and people from Sydney that have grown up in Sydney would be quite familiar, if they're still alive, with the ANZ Bank being on that corner, the corner of Roslyn and Darlinghurst Roads. Interesting, with the Wood Royal Commission, what came out of that?
Well, it told us that Abe Saffron kept these proper books for the underground in the safe of the ANZ, like it was a legal business. They were banking the money there. And everyone just thought the money was just moving to South Africa and they didn't put things together. There was money movements to South Africa from a hotel further down on Darlinghurst Road. But the only key to this building is the banks. So then you go back in the history, and one of the murders that was really unsolved was one that my husband used to talk about, and it was to do with Frank Newman. And he had the Nugent Hand Bank, and he also linked into the markets. He would go around the markets. But he also had links to Griffith, and Griffith was the mafia, and he was actually found shot in his car by a rifle, you know, but a rifle is very hard to pull a trigger.
Definitely.
You know, this probably was a murder then that went unsolved, you know.
Okay, so folks, the plot thickens, and all of this information is available on the internet by simply typing in any of the names or information mentioned, and it's quite startling stuff. The people of Sydney are still wondering what happened to Juanita Nelson and some of the other murders around Sydney. You know, in 1975, there was a nightclub known as the Carousel. And a few days before Anita went missing, she was investigating some of these links to King's Cross. She was invited on the 30th of June, 4 days before the Carousel appointment, by Trigg and another man, Carousel barman Shane Simmons. When interviewed by police in November 1977, Simmons confirmed that the advertising story was wrong and their actual intention was to kidnap Nelson if she was alone and to take her to see people who wanted to talk to her. This is what we know. And even went so far to say they had planned it by saying, just grab her arms and stop her calling out. No real rough stuff. No gangster stuff. We thought that just two guys telling her to come would be enough to make her think if she didn't come, she might get hurt. We talked about when she came into the room, one of us would be standing there. The other one would come up behind her and just quietly grab her by the arms. And maybe put a hand over her mouth or pillow or something like that. Startling stuff, you know, and the Cross has always had a colourful past, and the banks and the involvement, the Juanita disappearance. Without mentioning names, you also mentioned about the aunties of the Cross, and just describe that to the listener, the whole culture and the gangs that may or may not be connected.
Well, the thing is, when Bill Bayer was caught in the Woods Royal Commission, it was by Task Force BAX, B-A-X, in 2009. Bill Bayer came down, but the person who had been feeding him the drugs never was caught by what I could find. So then you started to think their investigation stopped at a level that would allow, allegedly, this drug network to keep on going. And that is the link, I believe, to the auntie. Well, the link they say, they call her the auntie on Darlinghurst Road. It's a known fact. It's been in the papers. They've written books about the auntie. And we had the ABC do a show about the auntie. And we've had the ABC do a show about rake to do with on the basis of Barrister Water Street. And that linked to the Piccolo Bar, which is, again, on Roslyn Street. It was like we were centering something, you know. But did BAX stand for a brothel at the X? That is a question that has come to my mind just of late.
So lots of information here, and we could probably go on and on, but we won't. But one thing I found interesting about, just back on Juanita, was that photograph that was issued to the public in the Herald, the Sydney Morning Herald, or was it the Telegraph? Well, they issued a lookalike or a picture of what she looked like. But your investigation has brought forward that, in fact, she never looked like the person that they put up in the photo. What can you tell us about that?
Juanita was a model. She was beautiful if you look at her photos. Her eyes were always made up. Her hair was never out of place because it was wigs. She had this beehive look, this beehive wig. Yes. Though she had long hair, she did have wigs
too. It was always
too.
Up. And the hair was always up, yet the photograph shows a woman in a raincoat almost, or with her hair down.
Yeah,
and what do you think happened there? Why was that photograph used?
Well, that was, I believe, to steer people away from what she looked like that day. You know, to say people, you know, they might see her. And you think about it. If they had some prostitute who would wear clothes similar to that and walk around King's Cross in days after, people would say, oh, I saw her. And that's what happens in some of the unsolved cases of missing persons. People say they have seen someone, but really they never saw the person at all.
Wow, there we go. So, folks, this is Whistleblowers. We're here to look at information that's out there on the internet. and uncover new information. And Jennifer Stone's here. She's the one that's done all the work over the years and has got hold of a lot of information, newspaper articles. So, Jennifer, would you like to add anything else about the banks or about this story?
Yeah. Well, the banks, when I started to follow it up, when Anita Nelson had told a tarot reader that I go to that she was on a bank or in a bank, we had a bank as a key. And you know where he thought? He thought it was out at Kate Banks, out at Cornell, yes, where there have been some bodies, and Juanita Nelson and Christopher Flannery, they thought was found out there when the desal plant was getting built.
Wow.
But those bodies were not them at all.
It wasn't their bones or
no. No. So it was interesting, that was where he thought. But the bank, I thought, it's got to be the bank, the ANZ Bank. Because, you know, you're taking a person out of King's Cross dead, maybe. Wouldn't that be seen? But then there was research that I came across last year, and it talked about Juanita Nelson was still on a third level of the Carousel Club on the Friday night. And that was discussed openly at a lecture given by the university, looking into Juanita Nelson and her beehive hairdo and over 1,000 ways that Juanita could have gone missing in King's Cross. But we have a link to 1973 and to Frank Nugan was to the Nugan Hand Bank. Now, that was to an American. So we got an American involved, Michael John Hand, and he also linked to Bernie Horton. They came out after Bernie Horton. And Bernie Horton linked back to Texas, Dallas, Texas. But it's interesting, when they did the investigation on the Nugan Hand Bank, there was money going to Iving Trust in the USA. There's so much money. You think about the cocaine, it's billions of dollars worth every year goes through it. Some have said Clive Small estimated this auntie to be moving 30 to 50 billion way back when he was deputy commissioner. So, like, if it was the same figure now, it'd still a lot of money, but it could have gone up because of the price of drugs.
So Clive Small is a former detective and assistant commissioner of the New South Wales Police. His investigations included work as an investigator with the Woodward Royal, New South Wales Royal Commission into drug trafficking, as Jennifer mentioned. The Nugan Hand Bank, the shooting of police officer Michael Drury in the late 1990s as the head of crime agencies, and in the early 2000s as the head of the Greater Hume Region, he helped dismantle the Vietnamese street gangs that had made Cabramatta Australia's heroin capital, and the backpacker murders which led to Ivan Milat being convicted. Clive Small and Tom Gilling are the authors of the highly successful Smack Express, which Jennifer's mentioned, Blood Money, Betrayed, and most recently, Milat. So, Jennifer, Clive Small, done a lot of work over the years, good in the community, and helped uncover some of these links. But you mentioned him there and the banks.
Yes, the banks are the key. Because without the banks, this drug network would have cash everywhere and not be able to use it. They need to laundry it. And the Australian Tax Office has, and with other tax agents around the world, have been watching the banks and how they do it. But it's just like, are they doing it that way now? Well, by the latest Royal Commission in Australia, yes, they have been. And they've been getting heavily fined. But in 1975, when Juanita went missing, the banks are a key. And she was a key then to the cocaine getting moved to pay for it, the building in Victoria Street. if you think it that way. Then you start to look at the security guards that were working for Thiemann at the time were also the security guards on the clubs in Darlinghurst Road overnight.
Right.
So the world was just, you know, 2 degrees apart, but they were still working all interweaving together for one business, and that was the underworld, to get bigger and fatter and to control of the money. You know, it's a hidden power that they're wanting to have.
Well, stay tuned to next week, folks. We've got more to add on this subject. The involvement of the banks and, you know, organised crime, which has been written about by Clive Small and others, and Jennifer's bringing to light their involvement in, next week, a number of other related, possibly related or alleged unsolved murders in New South Wales and the links to the banks and organised crime. Jennifer, do you want to add anything else, a parting comment for our listeners?
Well, you have to wonder yourself, when a drug network gets exposed and gets brought down and lots of people get caught, how can it keep re-coming up like a phoenix rising again and again and again? That's because the heart of the operation, how this drug network is controlled, has never been exposed to the public. That's what I'm working on. That's what I'm trying to do. Solve a problem in society that has not been solved before.
Whistleblowers, if you like our podcast, please share it. Subscribe to our Instagram site and our YouTube channel. Whistleblowers, we'll be back next week with more information to keep your interest levels up and hopefully to bring light to light more information on some of the stories you've already heard. My name's Greg Kerr. I'll be back next week with Jennifer Stone. Welcome to Whistleblowers, Episode 9. 45 years since the disappearance of Juanita. The drug cops' home raids of this week. The price of drugs. And the Spider-Man coming to you today on Whistleblowers.
Australians to have their say and be respected and not have to suffer for it.
Victoria Street, King's Cross. Worth saving, you'd think, from developers and their high-rise apartment blocks. Juanita Nielsen fought to protect it, and for that, she lost her life.
She certainly was aware of danger around her. She was aware of the history of what was happening.
Editor of a local newspaper, heiress to a family fortune, she was not your average radical. And David Farrell, business partner and boyfriend, knew her better than most.
This was the street where I lived for 7 years. This was Juanita's street. She was part of this community and she died for this community. But here we are. This was
still standing, number 202 Victoria Street, the tiny terrace they shared.
It's 20 years ago. What do you think about when you see this house again?
I think of a lot of good times. I think of the worthwhile things that happened in this street, and that I still believe that Sydney and King's Cross does have a heart. That heart's still there, and that heart remembers.
That story is actually 20 years old itself now. That story was made 20 years ago, and today Today's date, the 4th of July, 2020, is 45 years since Juanita went missing. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well.
I'm joined by Jennifer Stone, Australia's Murder She Wrote, crime author, investigative journalist, has been looking at the Juanita story all of her adult life. So before we listen to more of that broadcast from Channel 7, which is 20 years old, and Juanita went missing 45 years ago, why have they got it wrong, do you think?
Well, they gave you a clue in that story. It was the heart of King's Cross. You know, I believe she's at the heart, the centre of the underworld today. Back in 2011, I sent an email in November 2011 to the police. I got a letter back, which I was shocked about. That was correspondence from the New South Wales Commissioner of Police, dated 3rd of December 2011, was when they received my research. It was regarding the unsolved murder of Juanita Nelson. It gave me a reference number, D/2011 for the year it was opened, and then 208952. That is a new case number for Juanita Nelson. I actually did get information that was new to the case to reopen it, and that was where my compelling writing of the story regarding Juanita is to bring exposure to the position of the heart of King's Cross to raise her skull.
What happened to the cross was what has happened to all of Sydney, what has happened to the key, the centre of the city. There's just too much money around.
Only a few recordings of her survive.
A developer simply wants empty houses. They're more valuable. So, gradually, the people started leaving. There's very little of the old cross now.
You're going to endanger your own life, you're going to endanger the life of policemen.
By the early 70s, Victoria Street was changing fast, and the fight against high-rise development had turned violent.
Okay, so Juanita was certainly a very good investigator like yourself, and she started uncovering information probably a little bit wider than property development. What unfolded in these days and weeks and months before her disappearance?
Well, she said it herself in that tape. It was too much money. Where was all this money coming from? Remember when Frank Thiemann's development was getting built, the estimate was $60 million back in 1975. That's a lot of money back in 1975 when a point of heroin was $20 in America and some say $50 on the strip in Darlinghurst Road back then. So that's a lot. If all this development was through the alleged drug dealing, was feeding it. Well, that's what Juanita, I believe, died for, because that's what she was exposing. What was feeding this development? The money.
With Juanita Nielsen's disappearance, he still lives in Sydney. David Farrell thinks he knows why Arthur King survived the abduction and Juanita Nielsen did not.
She would not, from my knowledge, have given in easily. It would have been like bagging a fox. It would be very difficult to take Juanita easily. She would have fought.
What do you think is her legacy?
Old Victoria Street really still has some things that are worth going there for. It still has beautiful plane trees. It still has a mix of people from all over with different thoughts. It's not quite as diverse as it once was, but it still hums along.
So there we go. We've heard from a report of 20 years ago, and today there is a small group of people meeting in the middle of King's Cross to commemorate Juanita and the Juanita Nelson story. We've just heard from her ex-boyfriend there who lived with her in that unit, and people can go online and find out more about the Juanita Nelson story. But you've been contacted by Channel 7 and somebody's organising something today. What do you think will ever happen with this story? I mean, so many cold cases have been solved over the years. You mentioned Juanita's skull and remains have never been found. So can you throw a little bit of light on, you know, in your mind, what might lie ahead with, you know, forensic science continuing to develop the way it is? Even if we do uncover old DNA, et cetera, there still may be an end to this story in our lifetime.
Yes, there was. How I reopened the case was when I started to put the pieces together, the age of the guys were all, you know, about 20 years older than me, and they were threatening my life. And even this week I've had threats on Facebook to me, which I thought was interesting, that as the, you know, the memorial time of Juanita, it's a very somber time, but, you know, the people will be gathering in Victoria Street with a red rose for some. A single red rose was what she loved. That was one of her favourite flowers. So it's interesting that some call it the Rose Cross that this gang had done to her, you know, that satanic rituals that I link into.
And police over the years, not just in this case but other cases as well, have gone beyond the realms of science when they cannot solve a case. And those detectives, we've heard many podcasts, you know, including Gary Jubelin recently, that have been saying they go outside, they're prepared to go outside the realms of what they've been taught at the police academies and, you know, what science tells them. And, you know, some of these leads go somewhere, but very often they don't. In this case, you believe there could be something, a wider net with the, maybe, you know, spirit world or underworld of that sort of dark nature?
Yes, well, the black magic was happening in King's Cross, 1975. There were meetings down Roslyn Street for that. It was Rosaline Norton would hold the meetings. The chemist shop would have a sign on Friday nights to not be open. You know, we had Juanita Nelson just a couple of days before she went missing was door knocked at home, and it was to do with a meeting at the Carousel Club. They needed her somewhere where they could get to her. But Juanita was gathering information on, I believe, 16 people, and there's a lot of research out there saying it, 16 dossiers she was collecting. One of them was allegedly a police commissioner at the time. Many of the high-profile people she was collecting information on would be dead now, just like Abe Saffron. We know Victoria Street, some of that development was curtailed through her actions. But remember, she was looking for the money. And that part of the story has never been the focus of any of the newspaper reports or the television. They focus about Victoria Street development. They don't focus about the money and where the money came for these developments.
And as we heard in that interview from 20 years ago, there isn't actually much audio of Juanita being interviewed, so much of her information has probably gone, been disposed of by now, that she might have been studying or keeping online. 11 months ago, the diary came forward, and so never before seen photos of the former newspaper owner and journalist is believed to have been murdered. So there still is information out there, and the contents of the photos that came to light 11 months ago were in 33 boxes, and They were unearthed in a lost Foy family archive. So with the emergence of some of this material that's never been seen, hopefully that information is now in the hands of the right people, we will begin to see something develop in this case. And no doubt, Jennifer, you'll keep us up to date with what's happening this weekend. You mentioned something happening in the main street of King's Cross at a cocktail bar.
Oh, yes, Dulcie's, which is a bohemian cocktail bar. And they're presenting Juanita's story. But you've got to remember, it's an ex-cop that's delivering the story. And by exposing Juanita Nelson's story, you actually unravel, I believe, allegedly links to corrupt coppers that were involved.
Okay, and for those interested in this story, you might want to keep your eye on commercial media in Sydney, Channel 7, and also the ABC for the continuation of the Juanita Nelson story. You're listening to Whistleblowers. We're going to continue now. Whilst we're talking about drugs and money, we've got a story this week in the Daily Telegraph, written by a prominent crime journalist, Shari Markson, titled "Drug Cops, Home Raids, Police Became Cooks to Ensnare Crooks." And Jennifer said when I met her this morning, she couldn't believe this story had come into the media, and we've done a little bit of investigation here on the internet. We can't find many videos or other sources of information for this story. So, Jennifer, when you heard about this story, and I can't see it anywhere else, it was broadcast briefly yesterday in the Sydney Daily Telegraph. It's a bizarre story, and if there's any truth in it, the voters of New South Wales, the ordinary citizens of New South Wales, would be shocked to hear about what's going on behind the scenes in this so-called war on drugs, where, you know, we've had people like the Police Commissioner Mick Fuller and others say that they're winning the war on drugs. Well, have a listen to this story.
Well, the police, you started to think when I was researching in King's Cross and exposing the drug network, and there's so many drug busts, how were these crooks that I could see getting the drugs? And one thought we had was they were coming out of the police station themselves. And many of the leads we had was the talk around, you know, the underbelly style talk, the secret society, the ombrata, you know, we're keeping this very tight-lipped, but it's coming out of the cops. And we couldn't expose this. We could expose a drug deal where they could get the drugs coming in from overseas, but for certain drug runners, they have still not been caught. And I'm still exposing to the cops, these guys have still not been caught.
So in essence, this story is about a plan, and is it part of the Strike Force Dominion? Or is it separate to that, where obviously undercovers were pretending or being involved in the production of the drugs themselves?
Okay. Strike Force Dominion is the one that the police, New South Wales, have been working on to expose the corruption allegedly within the police. So this has gone to the police professional standards, and there's no charges have been laid as yet. So the cops were actually selling the drugs and had approval from high up to do this. So if someone came looking for a kilo, they go, oh, we can supply it. And then they catch them out. But when this Strike Force Dominion actually did raids on a yacht at Balmain, it was kilos was loaded up on the wharf, and you can see. And those packages of methamphetamine looked exactly the same that had come from the Mexico drug bust.
All right, I'll just stop you there. So basically what we're looking at, and those that are interested in this story, if you put into a Google search, drug squad cops raided, you'll see photographs from this week's Sydney Daily Telegraph of the drugs that Jennifer's talking about and how they're packaged and, you know, armed police and police in hazmat suits going through the drugs. And what you're saying in your instincts told you is that the way that they're all wrapped has something to do with international drug syndicates from your studies in Mexico and America, South America.
Yes, in the golden Southeast Asia, the golden triangle. So it was the way they were wrapped. So what I did was I looked for other drug raids where the pictures were the same as the packets of methamphetamine. And they came in April 2020 to a bus that had come from Mexico. And it was on a yacht. And this was a yacht. So like as though the yacht's getting sailed into Sydney Harbour and then they're selling it. So, okay, they'll catch some guys, but then they won't catch the big guys. Then the big guys have this protected supply chain that's happening, and where is all that money? Now, that's of interest to me and would be to all the viewers that are New South Wales voters as to what's happening with this and how come this has been approved by high-up police.
I'll have to see if I can get an invitation to a barbecue at Mick's place because information like this we don't see broadcast. And I know for a fact that if you want a story on the front four or five pages of the Daily Telegraph, you need a good publicist. And this to me at the moment, because it's not widely covered by the other news outlets, sniffs of marketing. And somebody trying to push a particular message. And, you know, the sad message for people in Australia and New South Wales is we have lost the war on drugs. But our commercial media, and particularly one avenue of the commercial media, which conservative politics, you could say, use this media as their voice in Australia, want us to believe that we're winning the war on drugs. But we're not. As we can see in these photographs here, something is not right. And this probably leads us into talking about the price of drugs. Why are we not winning the war on drugs, Jennifer? It's got to do with your research of over, you know, 30 years here and the price of some of the drugs themselves. So this leads us on to, you know, I use the word dosage, what the average addict needs as a dosage, and why we see the war on drugs being lost, and why we now see in this article police being involved in manufacturing the drugs and also taking drugs that have been confiscated from international raids and then being sent back out there again and sold to try and entrap some of the people that they've been trying to catch for years. So just tell us a little bit about the main illegal drugs and what you've discovered about pricing.
Well, the Woods Royal Commission, that actually allowed the drugs to be sold back out onto the street until deaths started to come. And that's exactly what's happened now. The deaths have come and people are saying that it's been cut with fentanyl. And that's an important coincidence as we keep pushing for the police to do our search warrant. So when I came to King's Cross in 2011, a point of heroin was $100 on Darlinghurst Road. And if you'd go and with a known about you as needing heroin, you would get a milkshake container with a spoon with your heroin on. So they need the spoon to heat it up. And they come away from the shop with a straw and just looking as though they were sucking a milkshake. And there was nothing in it, $100. And it was quite common that this shop what they were dealing was heroin and not much of the rest of the takeaway menu they had, bacon and eggs or running 24 hours a day. But they were doing a great trade on milkshakes.
Very good. I can't help but chuckle there. And the sad price for the person on the street who is, you know, for whatever reason, addicted to a substance. Often there's underlying issues of depression or anxiety. Sometimes it's recreational. We know a lot about the stimulant use here in Australia. And I'm sure there are really hard-working police. The majority of police and the different squads are working hard on behalf of the taxpayer and the citizen to get some results. But it must be increasingly frustrated from these hard-working police themselves to know that there's other things going on with, you know, the big fish, and they just seem to get away with more and more each year. They're a protected species, and when you read the Telegraph, you just see that the focus always seems to be on demonising the drugs themselves and demonising the addict on the street. And, you know, it all links in with the Juanita Nelson story. You know, people who have tried to bring this to light in the past in a very serious way, like she did, met with their demise. So, Jennifer, we've got a lot of crystal meth around these days. We've still got more heroin than ever. What's the pricing like on the street, and where do you think most of it's coming in from these days?
Well, I used to have a laugh to myself when the police car used to have the P-O-L missing on the side of it, and it had ice. And I used to tell people that was the local ice dealer. And it was just a joke, but really, it starts to be a few people dealing drugs that you cannot bring down. Starts to make you wonder how this protected species exists. So the meth tray, some say our auntie on the street that I refer to, the Asian grandma, is moving between 30 to 50 billion a year. But the meth trade in Australia is worth about $90 billion a year. Now, that is a huge amount when you start to think this is like a government-sponsored drug network that was being exposed by the police themselves the other day. They made front page of the newspaper. So 2011, a drug shot of heroin was $100. If I moved off Darlinghurst Road, you could pick it up for $50. So the locals knew where to get it for $50, and it was the visitors to King's Cross, so the backpackers or the people that had come for the good weekend, would be paying the higher price. You then start to realise that in America that was only a $20 hit. Back in 1974, when the Defoe family were murdered in the Amityville murders. But when Juanita Nelson went missing, a point was around a couple of years later, was people would tell me it was about $50. And you start to think that's like a wealthy drug habit they've got. And what was supplying it, you know? Some say the home invasions, the, you know, stealing of jewellery and that sort of hawking of system of, you know, selling, you know, your stereos and that at the pub. But that's nearly been a bygone era now because people have got such good security systems on their home to protect them, you know.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And Southeast Asia is always on the police radar. Amazing. You want to add something more there, Jennifer, before we move on?
When I started to do the Spider-Man, the William Terrell case, I had a few researchers that linked into me that talked about the blue drum. Now, if we put William Terrell into a bucket with a lid, and people kept saying, no, on the fishing trawlers, they're this blue drum. But also the blue drums are linked to the methamphetamine trade. And it's one of the ways that they've put them on the fishing trawlers to come out.
In particular with that is the pseudoephedrine is often transported via these blue chemical drums, you might call them. So you made the link between the chemical drum for the manufacture of other stimulant products like ecstasy, but the chemicals often behind them in their liquid form go into a blue drum. That's right.
Yeah. And so by putting a child into a bucket or a drum or with a lid, then his DNA would not be on a boat. So we come back to a boat. So the drugs coming into Sydney Harbour, that this police raid caught one, but hang on a minute, they exposed the police were selling drugs in the Woods Royal Commission back in the 1994 to 1996. And now in 2020, we've got the same system happening.
Very good, Jennifer. Thank you for that information. And we might, because we've gone over time, we might come back to the boats in Sydney Harbour. A fascinating story, the history behind the commercial boats that move in and out of our harbour quite endlessly on a daily basis, and the distribution network and where things begin to head once they get on shore. So stay tuned to Whistleblowers. We'll be bringing you some information about the Pyrmont area of Sydney, the fish markets, in coming episodes. And I will ask Jennifer to return with an update on the little Spider-Man, because we know there's some things happening in Kendall after the Taree inquest. So we'll bring you up to date with that. But before we finish, did you have anything else to say on this morning's topic before I talk about the tea lady's tips?
Anything more on today's topic?
The drug cops raid. Back in 2012-13, we had an idea of making magnesium product that's quite legal and you can buy it from a pharmacy, and making it look like pink heroin and seeing if that came back out onto the streets, linking to King's Cross Police Station. And it did. We believe it did, because people were saying they'd bought this pink heroin off respected drug dealers, and we'd say to them, which ones? They were the ones we thought that were protected. And that was where we had a lead that we sent back into the police. So as many leads that get to the police to do drug raids like this, as many leads and many years of research. But you still think from 1994 to 1996, the Woods Royal Commission, that same research is still being really examined now in 2020 for them to see the same patterns existing.
Okay, there you hear it, folks. Whistleblowers, episode 9. We've covered Juanita Nielsen, the drug cops' home raids, and the price of drugs here in Sydney, New South Wales. We've covered some serious topics, and well, this could be serious if you do like to punt. And one of the ways Australians like to punt is on the horse races. And in weeks to come, Jennifer's going to bring us an episode all about the, you might say, behind the scenes of Australia's thoroughbred industry. But interesting, I caught her out one week when she mentioned the numbers 7 and 9. So if you're, it's a Saturday morning, if you're going to the races, you might want to listen to the end of this podcast, Jennifer. What's the significance of the 7 and 9 and the tea lady's tips?
Well, number 7 links to God or the Lord. And this gang, I believe, is they're making themselves to be the Lord on earth with their man-made heaven. So you start to think, number 7 is a number that plays quite close to their heart. And number 9 is always a number that links into, you know, the 9 evil families behind the drug network. And a number 9 had come up in many of my research. So a couple of years ago, I started doing a bit of research on the tea lady's tips and the numbers on the horse racing as how could they be using this to clean funds. And I started to notice there was a pattern sometimes in certain numbers of the horse racing, and then the trifecta would add up to a 7 or a 9. And I started to think, hang on, this is a pattern. And the pattern linked to Melbourne and Brisbane. And I sent it into the police because it had taken me about 6 months, and I had actually been collating lots of newspapers with my research, and I even had to tell people I didn't have a gambling habit. I was just doing my research because they were shocked at how many pages I had been circling different horses on.
Well, there we go, folks. That's Whistleblowers with an entertaining end to today's podcast. And we might come back to horse racing because we've seen one of Australia's Melbourne Cup winning trainers arrested and banned from tracks for 4 years. They call it the mugs game, but there's always a fascination in Australia about the horse races, and Whistleblowers will return with a podcast on the crimes and the colourful characters that go to the races on a Saturday. Thanks, Jennifer, for being with us today. I'm sorry about my croaky voice, but I'm sure listeners will be interested in some of the topics that we've brought up today, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Okay, you're welcome. And please like Jennifer on her Instagram page, her Facebook page, and her Twitter. And for all those listening to the Anchor podcast, you can hear this podcast on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Microsoft, or wherever you get your favourite podcast from. My name's Greg Kerr. Thanks for joining us today on Whistleblowers.